Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Today's program deals with immigration. We're going to talk about immigration in America and specifically the situation with immigrants in Missouri and Kansas. We'll have two speakers for you today. One is an attorney, Angela Ferguson, who's going to handle the Kansas side, and Vanessa Crawford Argon is going to talk about a Missouri organization that helps immigrants when they move here. Welcoming America is a national organization that helps with immigration issues as well as integration issues and building relationships, and helps build relationships between U.S. citizens and immigrants. So we're going to have kind of a panel. It'll actually be two speakers. We'll also have a video, of which, of course, you'll hear the audio on this show. And, of course, we'll do what we always do, which is take a break about 30 minutes in and resume with some questions from the audience for our panelists. This program was recorded on Sunday, May the 25th, at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. We're going to have a short introduction, and then we will introduce Angela Ferguson, who will introduce the video presentation, of course, which you'll have to visualize yourselves, but you will hear the audio and it will be self-explanatory, so it will be difficult to listen to. So, let us go right to the introduction. You're listening to the All Souls Forum, and here we go.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the forum at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. We've been doing these forums since 1943 on a weekly basis. One of the big issues that we and many countries are dealing with now is the question of immigration. And so whenever we're looking for a forum on immigration, I always turn to Angela Ferguson, who is our church member, who is an immigration attorney. And so I am going to turn things over to her. We're going to include a brief segment of a video as part of our presentation, but I'll let Angela just get going here.
Thank you, Carolyn. Well, we called this kind of welcome to our table because Vanessa Crawford Argon and I are part of an organization called Welcoming America, and we're going to share some information about this national group, Welcoming America, and Vanessa is the executive director for the Missouri Immigrant Refugee Advocates, which is a Welcoming Missouri affiliate. And I'm involved on the Kansas side. So there's, because this is a welcoming church and we have all kinds of issues being a welcoming congregation, we're just going to talk about the positive, fun side of immigration today and tell you some stories about life here in Missouri and Kansas for our immigrant community. Shelbyville was a town that was not so welcoming, and so we're going to hear how the town of Shelbyville overcame some of the hurdles of becoming a welcoming community.
Welcome, everyone. First verse of America.
The Welcoming America model recognizes that for full immigrant integration, focusing on the immigrant community by itself is not enough. There's also a need to focus on the immigrant receiving community.
Today, we're happy to have with us a speaker who's going to talk to us about some of the issues and challenges that have come about because of immigration and refugees coming to Shelbyville. So please help me welcome Catalina.
So one of the key strategies of Welcoming America is direct public engagement through everything from a cultural dinner to community meetings.
There's a strong component of public education and doing presentations and dialogues with people, dispelling the myths and really putting a human face to the issue of immigration right now. A big part of what we do with Welcoming Tennessee is go out, have conversations that are not always comfortable.
And Shelbyville, Catalina, as our Welcoming Tennessee coordinator, was the person who first went and identified the relationships that we already had and the relationships that we thought we needed to build in order for our welcoming campaign to be successful.
If I started any concerns, any thoughts, yes.
And she facilitated these early conversations.
I was constantly aware of my role as someone who's not from Shelbyville. As an outsider, I had to do a lot of work in building relationships and getting people to trust me.
Can I tell you a little bit more of who I am and where I come from, my own immigrant story? I'm from Colombia.
So I was very diligent about sharing my own story.
I'm also going to invite a to briefly explain a little bit more of the perspective of a Somali.
And I would also encourage that local community leader.
And he worked for a refugee camp in Somalia. And
to share their own personal story.
Hello, everybody.
Why they had to migrate and their experience being an immigrant here.
I was born in a rural area. My parents were nomads. They were camels and goats and sheep.
Having an immigrant talk about how they came to this country and why they wanted to be here and how they feel about a local community is going to be so much more than you telling people facts.
I want to say a few things about the Somalis. They come from a war-torn country. When they come here, they come with hope. They come with a goal, better life. They come for peace, human dignity.
So our advice, start with stories, real people.
That was always so important for me to show that we have more things in common than what they say sometimes, so that we don't have.
One thing I would like to say is it's not easy to teach Somali, right away.
We all have not always been Americans. Our forefathers came from other places. They came here for a better life.
We got a sheet handed to us today that explains a whole lot of things to me that I didn't know.
And we got people here moving in this community. They're coming here for one reason or another, better living conditions.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
This is what America is built on.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm excited to see the hearty congregation that we have here today. So I expect those of you who are here to ask questions. Otherwise, I'm going to have a hard time. So the thing that I always like to start off before I do anything else is ask, anybody here either born in another country or have a spouse who was born in another country? How about parents, grandparents, farther back than your grandparents, great-grandparents? I have absolutely no idea when my family came to the United States. That's always one, too. When I'm talking to college students, they always raise their hand, and I have no idea when my family got here. I always just like to ask that question because it, first of all, gives me an idea of the experience of the people in the audience, but also sometimes people look around and realize that their community is a little bit more diverse even than you realized. My organization, MIRA, Missouri Immigrant and Refugee Advocates, I'll tell you a little bit about us and then why we became part of the Welcoming America movement. So we are a statewide coalition that organizes and advocates for the rights of immigrants and refugees. People know us best, I think, for our work in Jefferson City, where we're the only statewide organization whose entire agenda focuses around advocating for the rights of immigrants. We have more than 40 members around the state, which include everything from faith congregations to community groups, labor unions, business groups, and a few individual businesses. And we advocate for the full gamut of the immigrant experience. So we work with people who came to the United States as refugees.
We work with people who are naturalized citizens. We work with people who are undocumented. A lot of folks seem to think that the immigration experience in the United States and in Missouri is a Latino issue, and it is so much broader than that, and we work with a full range of people from Africa and Asia and South America and Europe. And so the question comes, why welcoming? Because our organization started as a really hard-hitting, and as did TURC, the Tennessee Immigrant Rights Coalition, which is the organization that you saw in the video. Both TURC and MIRA were a straightforward advocacy immigrant rights organization. We were doing policy work, we were doing community advocacy, we're out in the street having rallies. There was an experience that they had in Shelbyville, Tennessee. The clips out of that were part of a whole film called Welcome to Shelbyville. Shelbyville, Tennessee was a lot like communities here in Missouri and all over the country, where there was, it was a small town. Everybody knew everybody, or at least knew your relatives, right? It had all of its own racial, I'm going to say, dialogue. Sometimes it was a little bit more, it was a little darker than dialogue, right? And then they started to experience new waves of immigrants. They got a wave of Latino, primarily Mexican immigrants, several years prior to a settling of Somali refugees who had come to town to work in a Tyson chicken plant. And the town just didn't know how to integrate these new people. You know, they don't look like us. They don't talk like us. You know, if you watch the whole film, one of the things that you'll hear somebody say is, you know, at least the folks from Mexico were Christian like us. We don't know anything about these folks. And so what that means is we're scared of them, and we will start discriminating against them, and we will work to get them to leave. And so the folks at TURC, which were the folks that you saw in that video, as well as community members, there was, there were folks, and it was ironically or not, the settled Mexican population that reached out to the Somalis and said, we've been where you are, let us help you. Because we all realized, or I wasn't there then, but the reason for the welcoming paradigm is it's a lot easier to make a community welcoming, but really make a community welcoming in sort of the intangible sense, but also in the really tangible sense, like, you know, make sure that you have inclusive policies and practices at the municipal level, make sure that your police force is culturally competent in working with people of different backgrounds, making sure you have language access for parents at school and all that stuff. And all that's what it really is to be welcoming. But before you can get there, sometimes you have to start all the way back at, there's these people and they're in our community and we need to understand each other better. And oftentimes you can do that so much easier rather than talking about specific policy questions, because that gets really complicated sometimes. All of a sudden we're not talking about, you know, Angela, the human being who's sitting here, and her needs. We're talking about something else. But if we can reach people through sharing your stories, and not just, you know, sharing the story of the Somali refugee who came here in the last 5 years, but sharing the story of your grandparents and why they came here, and perhaps their refugee experience. By sharing arts and culture, by doing things like film screenings. MIRA, Welcoming Missouri, has an art show every year where we showcase the work of immigrant artists, oftentimes parallel with a native-born artist and their experience, and use that to get people who wouldn't normally be exposed to the immigrant experience, talking about it and understanding it better through food through conversations. The line that I always use is it's a lot easier for me to help somebody understand why they should oppose a bill that makes it hard for non-English speakers to get a driver's license if the first thing people understand that there's someone in their community who doesn't speak English and that they need a driver's license. So that's why welcoming is important. Some interesting examples of when using this work in Missouri. So I'll let you guys in that I just moved to Kansas City about 2 months ago with my husband. I'm a St. Louis native, so and I'm dealing with my own migration story right now and trying to integrate. There's a community in the St. Louis area. If you were to ask just about any member of the Latino immigrant community in St. Louis, like, so tell me about the Rock Road, so the St. Charles Rock Road in North County, and they would all go, don't, we know about that place. We don't, you know, the police were intentionally and systematically harassing immigrant families. Kids were having a hard time in school. It was there were municipal policies that were making it very difficult for for immigrant families who were renters. None of that's okay, and some of it's downright not legal, right? But a lot of it. It was all stemming from the fact that this was a historically white, blue-collar community that was dealing with closing of a auto manufacturer. I know that this is a story that gets repeated over and over and over again, and I'm thinking of communities in the Kansas City area that have experienced the same thing. So there was high unemployment, and simultaneously, having nothing to do with that, there was, over the past 10 years in the state of Missouri, we have experienced an exponential growth in our immigrant community. And so families were moving out to the suburbs where they could afford a house and the schools were good, right? And so some people in town were looking around and putting two and two together and getting five and saying that, you know, blaming high unemployment rates on immigrant communities that were living there, you know, and just being very uncomfortable with the fact that there were people in their community that didn't look like them. You know, and from our organizing standpoint, like, we have to understand that, too. We have to understand the experience that people are having. Like, I live in this neighborhood. I've lived in this neighborhood my entire life. I live down the street from where my parents raised me. This was the experience that we were having in this particular community. This is the experience that they're having in Shelbyville. Our community doesn't look like it used to in a lot of ways, in some ways that don't have anything to do with immigration. And so you have to understand where people are in order to have a conversation with them, right? So we had to acknowledge that. And at the same time, we were dealing with these really nasty repercussions of, you know, families were being targeted by police. Ended up being the solution was we had a sit down with members of the local Catholic Church was actually where, you know, some, like, faith communities always end up being home base in situations like this. And so we were talking to the immigrant community members in this church that happened to also be the home church of the mayor of this little town. But the immigrants all went to Spanish Mass, and the mayor went to English Mass. So they hadn't met a lot of these people who lived in his neighborhood and go to his church, and even their kids go to the same school that his kids went to, right? And they sat down and started talking about, what do you want for this community? And, you know, what do I want for this community? Why did I move here? Why are my kids here? Why am I living out here in North St. Louis County instead of the city where I had originally settled? And when you actually come to, like, have a conversation with someone as a peer, as someone else in your community, you know, another parent of kids at school, you can have a completely different conversation. You know, suddenly it's much less adversarial, and you can actually start talking about issues. What we determined in that conversation, the big truth that came out, was that the local police were actually, and they've stopped this practice, and it's much, much better now, and I don't want anybody to think that it's not, because I want to give credit to the good work that they've done. But at the time, there were actually police running license plates in the church parking lot during Spanish Mass. And the mayor didn't know that this was happening in his own parish, right? Because he hadn't, because you don't know, because you don't talk to people, because you live, you know, in the sphere that you live in. The success story about that particular municipality is that we were actually able to get the entire police force to ultimately go to an anti-racial profiling training run by the Anti-Defamation League, which is a big deal, and got the city to publish new ID policies that they were using to discriminate against families that were filing for occupancy permits. So that was, and now those same immigrant activists that came together because their community was very unwelcoming, and how do we make allies of the Anglo non-immigrant community that's here? They don't want to stop. They won, right? And so they've actually formed a committee of themselves, and they want to move on to the next issue. But not only do they want to move on to the next problem, they want people to know that their community is changing. They're tired of the reputation that their community has had. Remember I told you, people would say, like, you know, not to drive down the St. Charles Rock Road, right? You know, about St. Anne Police, right? They're tired of that. They don't like that they live in a community that has had that reputation, and they've worked hard to change it. And so now they're working with others in the community to change the reputation within the immigrant community of this previously very unwelcoming community, because they live there. They have families there, they go to church there, they have businesses there, and they want it to do as well as anybody else, and they're tired of people not wanting to go there because it has a reputation for being discriminatory. It's an ongoing process with them. And you know, it's an interesting example of, you know, the Welcoming America philosophy, the Welcoming Missouri philosophy, is, you know, talking to people where they are, reaching out to the receiving community, which is the term of art that I think they used in the film that I keep using. By the receiving community, we also just mean whoever has been there longer, because oftentimes the receiving community includes other immigrant groups that were there first, or there prior to this particular immigrant group. You know, working through, as I said, conversation groups, presentations, educational opportunities, arts and culture, food, the kinds of things to get people to the table. And then where we've been successful is using that to actually get people to the table so that we can have a conversation about the serious policy implications that are happening in that community. Because it's not simply enough to say that you're immigrant welcoming. It's not simply enough to say that you value diversity. You actually have to, you know, in order for a community to be welcoming, there can't be the barriers that there often exist for immigrants to become full functioning productive members of the community. And the thing that we say too, and this is part of what welcoming can do, is, you know, something as simple as you know, translating the flyers, you know, that's step one. But that's step one. There's a whole bunch of other steps after that. And what you actually, what welcoming seeks to do is to, you actually, you know, it's not for folks who look like me, you know, native English speaking, Anglo, St. Louis natives, to say what the immigrant community needs and how we need to address what we're doing to make ourselves more inclusive. You actually have to ask members of the immigrant community. You actually have to figure out what those folks need. Our conversations in that community, it turned out that one of the big problems that people were having was understanding the school enrollment process for their kids, because that, you know, there wasn't a lot of language access there, and there was confusing documents and that kind of thing, you know. So that, you know, in other communities, it's different. In other communities, that might not be the experience that people have. And so it's sitting down with people from the receiving community that want to be and can be helpful and involved and willing to change themselves, members of the immigrant community, and sharing their experiences, and then being able to put all of that into action is how to create a welcoming, is how to be a welcoming community. And we have been successful in doing this, like I said, at the city level. We've been working in school district, in that particular school district. They now have this amazing immigrant welcoming program to help integrate immigrant and refugee parents. There, I know that the AIR and some of the work that Welcoming Kansas has been doing was focusing on helping congregations to be more welcoming. It's a challenge, and it's ongoing, and I haven't yet found any case where I think that we would say, like, great, we're done. We did everything we needed to do, and now we're an immigrant welcoming community, and everybody's great. You know, it's an ongoing process. It's a continual learning process. You know, another thing that's challenging and important to understand and kind of great to work on once you've, you know, cracked the nut, is that there's a misconception, I think, particularly among native-born people or people who are coming from a position of privilege, is to believe that different immigrant communities understand themselves as being in the same group, right? That the Mexican immigrants and the Somali refugees understand each other, you know, view themselves as having common cause. And so it's you know, the native-born white folks and everybody else, when in reality there is a great deal of diversity. You know, sometimes the same kind of welcoming work that needs to be done within the immigrant community, you know, within various immigrant communities. Sometimes even what we see, you know, an established immigrant community that's been here for multiple generations, and then newcomers that may even be from that same country of origin but are new and so don't speak English, you know, don't have the same sort of economic prosperity. You know, that it's an ongoing, multifaceted process, but one that I think is really important as our communities are looking to the future and how, you know, how are we going to grow? You know, everybody understands that immigrants and refugees are part of that. You know, there's a lot of economic advocate, you know, business community folks are now looking at the immigrant community as an important driver of the economy, which is entirely true. But you know, like we keep saying, it's not just enough to hang out the welcome sign. You also have to do the work to actually make your community a more welcoming place.
Thank you, Vanessa. And now, Angela, do you want to give us a little bit of update of what's going on in Kansas?
We survived this past legislative session with no anti-immigrant bills passing in Kansas.
Which is probably quite an accomplishment.
You know what? One of the questions I had for Vanessa is, you know, what's one of the major barriers of immigrants here? I mean, you'll see it right here in Kansas City. I think one of the major barriers is driver's licenses. Mm-hmm. If they don't have identification, if they're not legal to get behind the wheel, but they can't get to their jobs to feed their families, driver's licenses are a very critical issue. And this year in Kansas, there was a proposed driver's license bill that didn't go anywhere. It was not a great bill. But what happened in the Kansas legislature in the session was that it piqued the interest, and the chair of the committee has asked us to put together a good, decent bill for this coming session for next year. And the business community is behind it. And so the coalition is building to, hopefully, it will be our major push next year, is to get driver's licenses for undocumented in Kansas. You know, my big issue is simply national legislation. So on that front, we're still in a holding pattern right at the moment. Unfortunately, Congress has not taken good steps in the House to pass positive immigration.
They haven't taken any steps.
We're going to get there. Speaker Boehner promised this week again that he's going to help move the pending bill. And we need those phone calls. And we'll talk about that some more if you want to take care of the offering first, and then we'll get back into this.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, in my practice as an immigration attorney here in Kansas City, I deal mostly with the deportation side and with mostly Latino immigrants, with the undocumented, helping them get papers. Recently, I've been working on a project for a labor company here in town, and auditing all of their paperwork for their employees. And I'm just discovering this wealth of refugees that live in Kansas that have immigrated from Burma and, mm-hmm. and Somalia and all kinds of places. Folks that are hidden to me. You know, I don't see that part of the immigrant community at all. And it's really kind of made me curious about why they're so invisible. And wondering how we can start this conversation, this integration. I come from Hutchinson, Kansas, and that community has the Hispanics. We just did a huge welcoming event down in Hutchinson. The Hispanics don't mingle at all with the white folks. It's like the mass at the church she was describing. They're just separate communities. And trying to figure out how we can bring about some of these conversations and start them on a small basis here at All Souls or here in Kansas City. I think it's something that needs to happen so that the conversations change a little bit. Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas administration, city proclamations have been passed saying that we are welcoming communities. The mayor's you were instrumental in getting Kansas City, Missouri done, right? Was that before you?
No, that was I was here. Yeah.
Okay. And the mayor of Kansas City, Kansas has done that. We have 9 communities in Kansas that have now signed welcoming proclamations. So they are saying the right things. Now we just need to get some of the work on the ground to happen.
I was going to say, so there's actually, as part of the Welcoming America umbrella, they've actually started, and I don't know how familiar you are with this, Angela. There's a Welcoming Cities and Counties like official program, and so now, further than just passing a resolution at the city council level that says we're an immigrant welcoming community. There's actually a series of steps that they join with other cities. So it was really spearheaded by New York and Chicago, who you know, for obvious reasons, are on you know, the vanguard of immigrant inclusion in their their governments. But they, you know, that the cities actually pledged to take concrete steps towards making their communities more inclusive, and that includes everything from, you know, some cities are looking at this as you know, they actually create like a Office of Immigrant Affairs at the city level, in the same way that, you know, there's now in a lot of cities, you know, the Office of Economic Development or Office for Small Businesses or whatever, all the way to, you know, figuring out how to get more immigrants and refugees on advisory councils, you know, and how best to spend city resources in immigrant. And so actually the Columbia, Missouri just joined this past week, joined the National Welcoming Cities program, which is a really big, cool deal. I think that they might be they're the smallest city that I'm aware of that has done it so far, which is great. So it's Columbia, Missouri, St. Louis City and County, and then, you know, like Houston and Chicago, right? So that was great.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to the All Souls Forum. You heard Angela Ferguson, who is an attorney, an immigration attorney in Kansas, and we also heard Vanessa Crawford Argon. And we will hear more from both, as well as the audience, after we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Speaking of dollarocracy, the co-author was down at the library the other night and gave this rip-roaring speech about the history of America as one of increasing participation. And how this whole thing with dollars equal votes or dollars take the place of votes and all the, you know, the bait and switch and promise and withhold that immigration has experienced and many other things. So I want to ask a question about inter-programmatic collaboration, because I think we've seen in this current economic crisis things like Occupy, and several of the other things that have been run up the flagpole. And it's starting to become clear that the other side is becoming adept at playing us off against each other.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear how within your movement there's some awareness of that and maybe some thoughts about how we might kind of work in two directions, because I think that's what it's going to take, to both press on these issues and also be collaborating amongst the issue carriers.
Sure.
Thank you.
No, I think that's a really
painful.
it's also a really important observation, and I think that if the immigrant rights community or any other social justice movement is going to be successful, we have to recognize the intersectionality of our movement. MIRA was really founded on that principle, and that's why we operate as a coalition. You know, within I actually get this all the time, and so this is talking about people playing different groups with a common cause off of each other. People always ask me why the labor union movement, why trade unionists aren't supportive of immigrant rights, and because there's because the folks who are both opposed to unions and immigrant rights have created this narrative that is people in trade unions don't support immigrant rights, when in fact one of the greatest supporters of the immigrant rights movement and of comprehensive immigration reform specifically have been unions, it's exactly what you said. That's just what comes to mind when you talk about playing people off of each other. And it's when we all stand up together and say, no, we are speaking with one voice on this issue. You know, I think is a lot more. You know, speaking more broadly than that, there has been great ground made. In including women's issues in the immigrant rights community. There's a national collective called We Belong Together, which is specifically drawing attention to the plight of women immigrants and refugees and the specific impact of immigration law on women and families. In a lot of ways, you know, immigration policy doesn't look gendered when it's written down, but its impact, you know, is it, when when you do away with family unification visas in favor of business visas, what that means is that women from countries where women aren't allowed to get jobs don't have an opportunity to emigrate with their families, right? I'm not sure that everybody in that collective would call themselves feminist, but the feminist movement. I feel I'm in a Unitarian congregation, so I feel like I'm among friends when I say things like that. When I use words like privilege and intersectionality and feminism, the queer rights community has become very involved in immigration rights and vice versa. People know that there are reasons why the LGBT community are particularly impacted by immigration policy, and the same thing with the larger racial justice conversation. We wouldn't be able to have the conversation that we did about police profiling of the immigrant community without talking about the experience of the African American community, which is different but experiencing similar issues with the same source of problems. So I think that you're absolutely right, that the only way that any of us are going to be successful is if we all move together. And I think that the social justice community in Missouri in particular does a very good job of that.
Yeah, but we got to do better. But we've got to do better if we're going to win. You know, one of our struggles is really trying to get the evangelical churches to step up, and boy, they are speaking out on immigration but finding ways for us to work together in the business community on the Kansas side. The business community sitting down at the table with the labor unions it's a difficult conversation. They don't want to work together, and oftentimes they resist like crazy, but we're getting there on the Kansas side. One thing that you guys can all help me do is by attending the Moore Squared banquet that's coming up on the 12th, or supporting the Moore Squared work. They're working on immigration now in Kansas and Missouri, and it's a coalition of a lot of evangelical and black churches, and we're working on the fast food worker strike. And because a lot of the undocumented workers work in our fast food industry. And so standing up for the workers' rights with the immigrants, it's a coalition that we need to build and support.
I was thinking that another way that we might get together with some immigrant families is that Carver School, which we already have quite a bit of association with, is 80-90% Hispanic. You know, those kids know us now, and we might be able to get a picnic or something together with their families and things like that, and improve our Spanglish.
That's a great idea. Absolutely.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yes.
Welcoming is appropriate.
Yes.
It is historically as well as morally appropriate. And probably to 100% of the audience here, it's obvious that it's appropriate. But the immigrant community has to work with a great deal more than this audience. What other kinds of appeals besides, but it's the right thing to do, can you make?
I mentioned a little bit at the end of my talk that one thing that we see happening is the business community is really identifying the need for the need for immigrants across the skill spectrum as an economic need. As states like Missouri continue to and places like St. Louis and Kansas City lose population in proportion to the rest of the community, the actual growing parts of our community tend to be immigrant families. And so I think that's happening, that there's folks that never considered themselves previously to be allies of the immigrant community, largely because they never thought about it before, are really starting to come to the plate and saying that you know, we need immigration in our communities because it's good for our community. And so then it falls upon us to be like, yes, it is good for your community, and this is how we need to make your community good for the immigrant community that's coming in too. You know, so I think that that's really important. You're entirely right that we need to be out, not just talking to the choir, right? We need to be, and that's where I think that our work with schools, our work with the business community, our work with groups like that is really how you get there.
I'm just going to do a plug here for Welcoming America. They have one of the best websites with activities that individuals and organizations, churches can do. If you go to friendsofwelcoming.org, it's kind of a game, and it's a good way to get youth involved, or your small group or whatever. It's a game where they have tasks set out. You can do individually or you can do them as a group, and you earn points. You earn points just like if you were playing a kid video game. That this one's for adults. Learning about immigrants in your community, holding a conversation. You get points for having a conversation. And then reporting back what the conversation was. If you score enough points, they'll send you a prize. They'll send you a gift certificate to your favorite charity. It's a really
amazing. I have one to suggest if you were to win that you could.
Oh, yeah, you can donate to Mira.
One time Angela won for the month of all the people that were playing, and then she gave Missouri Immigrant and Refugee Advocates her prize money. So oh, I'm just saying.
It's possible. Come on, sign up and let's play together. Friendsofwelcoming.org, it's a good place to go.
I was going to mention, I was just at a conference that lasted several days held in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was for people who were rental property managers and owners. And that's always been, the rental property owners has always been seen at one time, like say in the Boston area, as a path for an immigrant. Someone would buy a triplex, and the family would live on one floor, and then they'd rent out the others and make things that way. But as I was sitting there at lunch one day, it suddenly occurred to me that the person sitting on one side of me was a woman from China. The person sitting on the other side of me was a woman from Kenya. The waiter was, the person who was waiting on us was from Eastern Europe. And so right there, I saw ways that we were benefiting from many different parts of the world. And I think that has been the case. It's not only our fast food workers, it's our engineers and our entrepreneurs and other kinds of things. I think we're going to need to draw to a close now, but are you going to be available to talk, to go down to the library for a few minutes afterwards and talk? So thank you all for coming.
You've been listening to a show titled Welcome to Our Table, Stories of Immigrating to the U.S. On today's All Souls Forum, it featured attorney Angela Ferguson and Vanessa Crawford Argon, talking about all kinds of immigration issues in both Missouri and Kansas. Hope this was an informative show for you. We always learn something on the All Souls Forum. So the program was recorded on Sunday, May the 25th of 2014 at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is produced and edited for broadcast by Barry Lee. Thank you to Rita Norton and the staff at All Souls for her help each week in preparing these programs for us to air. You can also find this program on our podcast archive, which is on the KKFI website at www.kkfi.org. And you can download the show, or you can just re-listen to it if you'd like to, or if you've heard about it and didn't get to hear this broadcast, it'll be available to you. It takes usually around a week for it to come up, so you might want to listen to some prior broadcasts while you're waiting for this one. That's all for this week. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Our theme song each week is provided by Fred Potter, Kansas City composer and musician. You are also listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.